this work? Yes, it works. Does it work now, too? Yes, it does. Okay. Hello. I'm glad to be here. I want to thank Rob Parker, whom some of you know already, one of our people who uses focusing with trauma work, who arranged for the three of us to come and didn't arrange for himself up here, so I need to mention him and thank him for all the work in coordinating, especially me. Then I want to tell you quickly that focusing by itself is not a method. Focusing deepens everything that we do, unless we don't do it. So I tell people, don't do focusing by itself, please. Do it with interaction and body work and every other thing. So I agree with what was just said here, that we need to pool all the resources we can get together. Focusing comes from inside, and so it fits in with whatever you're doing. It will deepen whatever you're doing. It's not something separate, although when you learn it, then it for a little while it seems like something very separate. But once you have it, it's no longer separate. I want to introduce myself all over again because I'm really a philosopher. My training is in philosophy. My degree is in the Department of Philosophy. And I've been doing philosophy all my life, and it happens that the practical side of it got well known. So I have to tell you this right away. And philosophy is something that's very difficult to read. You have to read everything five or six times, sentence by sentence, like a crossword puzzle that you're solving. So most of what I have put out in print and published is not philosophy. It's coming off of philosophy. It's trying to be simple and clear. But a lot of what I have published you already know. So today I want to introduce you to the philosophy part of it. The philosophy works with not concepts. It doesn't work, it doesn't have any content. It's not about anything. Philosophy is about the concepts, but not even the concepts. Theoretical people work on concepts. Philosophy works on kinds of concepts. And this is a funny notion to most people. And what I need to talk about is the kind of concept that we're developing, a kind of concept that's really different from all the concepts that we mostly use. It's a kind of concept that comes from studying living things first. And this is not done. Our concepts ape mathematics, which has been so powerful in making all of our technology, and I'm certainly not criticizing it, putting it down, or any silly thing like that. I'm talking into a microphone. I work on I write on computers. There are lights here. I wouldn't be here if it weren't for technology. But technology is not a good model for living things, because it has to do with making separate parts and putting these parts together. And living things are not made out of separable parts. I'll get back to that. There are two main points that I want to make. The first one is that for living things, you need a kind of concept where you understand that nothing is. And everything we usually think about is. Nothing is that lives. It always is and also implies forward. It is and implies. It never just is. It always is and has an implying of something that hasn't yet happened. And that something that hasn't yet happened is not fully structured. It's very, very what Freud called overdetermined. It's not indeterminate at all. It's very, very, very finely pre-structured, and yet it's also open. It hasn't yet happened. And only things that happened are fixed in structure. So my main point here is there is no is. It's always an is and implying, hyphenated. Secondly, there is no body apart from the environment. The body generates itself in the environment. out of environment. Between environment and body, only human beings make a distinction. And it's a very important distinction, and it helps us with science and chemistry and neurology and all those things that are very important and very helpful and make things. But living things are not made things, made out of parts things. Living things are not made by a separation between us and what we see or what we work on. Living things are always already both body and environment. So no is always is and implies, and no body, always body and environment. It's some next event in the body-environment interaction, in the body-environment unity. The next event that's implied is a, look at my hand. That's good enough there. It's forward, and it's out here. So we have to both use respect and also change the notion that we have of the body. It's not a structure that fills space and time. We need to consider it that way so we can analyze it and have medicine and chemistry and neurology and all these very important things. But the body is not a structure, just is in the environment, in space, like you see me sit here. The body is where I am out here talking to you, where I'm all the way up there, and without this, my body wouldn't be the way it is right now. And the words wouldn't come out right if I weren't a body-environment unity and if I weren't implying forward so my words come. Sometimes you can wonder where your words come from and how they come. People don't wonder enough. They open their mouth and the words come out. And how is that? And then if they don't come out, what do we do? Well, we say, excuse me, I don't mean that, wait a second. And then what do? Well, we wait and hope, and then some more words come out, and hopefully they're all right. Okay, so those are my 2 points. No is and no body. The next thing I want to say is there has to be an understanding that we are not only human. We're also animals, and not only animals, we're also plants. We're a tissue process. And it's the tissue process that has developed the capacity to be an animal. There are no animals without tissue process. But there's something very mysterious about animals. They behave. And all the studies of ethology for 100 years now have shown that the complexity of behavior is what they call built in. And animals learn, of course, they learn a lot. But even what they learn, like little kittens learn how to jump on mice, but they learn that when the adult cat demonstrates it once. So even learning is based on built-in capacities. And if you stimulate certain brain cells, you get the jumping anyway without any adult cat and so forth. A squirrel that's raised in a metal cage will bury nuts in the metal cage at a certain age. It'll scratch, if you give it a nut, it'll scratch the metal cage and put the nut there. The whole complexity of animal behavior is built in. But what is built in? What does it mean? A physiological understanding of the body does not permit behavioral complexity to be built in the body. You have to think it with a different kind of concept. You have to think that the tissues are not just structure in space. The tissues imply forward. And they are not just tissues within the skin. They are tissues in the environment that it makes itself out of to have even a skin. You have to understand that the body, our body, your body sitting there, is tissues that has the animal behavior complexity. And you can read that human beings don't have instinct anymore, but that's ridiculous. instinct is just a word for this built-in. Instinct is just like built-in. Somebody says, yes, I recognize that there's this huge animal complexity, but I don't know how it's out of the body. And these animals don't have concepts and all that, so how do they do this? Well, by instinct, we all learned in school. And then they didn't tell us what that is, right? Well, the body, the tissues, develop this extra capacity to have an external environment in which they behave. And then only come human beings, and we are completely continuous with that. Just our science of human beings is separate. So we study culture and history and all these wonderful things as if they came down from the sky. But obviously they came up from the earth through us into where we are now. So the human level of culture and patterns and making and technology, all that comes as a bodily process. Where does a scientist get a new hypothesis? They never tell you. Once in a while, someone will write, oh, I developed the double helix from a dream. Or somebody will say, I got this in the shower. Now, so those three levels you're sitting there being, and they're familiar, just the concepts are new. We need a new kind of concept, and I worked these out over the last 40 years, but it's not easy to read, but I invite you to look at it. It's on the web. You can find it. It's called The Process Model, and you might like the first few pages, even though it might take you a while to read them. Now, what I'm really here to say is that there is a fourth level on top of the plants and the animals and the human beings and the culture. The emotions are within the cultural patterns. When you get mad, when you are disappointed, all these things are within cultural stories. You don't get mad unless you are treated in some way that the culture teaches shouldn't happen. As long as everything runs routinely, you don't get mad. In another culture, you would treat it like that, but in that culture, they have different stories. So emotions are always within the stories that we learn. You know, we're culturally made out of stories. That's why we dream them at night, you know. Stories are not just told. Stories are very deeply culturally patterned. And human beings are not only cells, they're not only animals, they're also cultural stories. But there is now another level. And the other level is where focusing comes from. The other level is that the body is capable of giving itself still another kind of object. I should have mentioned objects, but it's too complicated. But at each level, there are different objects. And the world is not made of objects. The world is made of living interaction. And it has living things in it. They tell you the world is just burning gas, but that's only from the outside observed by mathematics. From the inside, the world has us in it. The universe has us in it. And the universe is at least as much as a dog or a horse or you and I. It includes us. And since we're here, and they can't tell us we're not here, you know, that much. So since we're here, there are these capacities of the living thing. And there is one more. The body can give itself an object that is in a different space and in a different time. It can give itself an object of a situation, of a whole situation. But this happens in a funny different space. It's a different space that happens. So a person can usually starts, with a discomfort that's diffuse. Like I'm angry and, you know, and it's hard to do anything with that. But there is a place where a person can say, oh. And once you learn that place, then the object changes. It's no longer an emotion. in a story. It's the whole damn thing together, the story and what happened and how I am and everything else that ever happened and all of my background and my animalness and my tissues. All of that together becomes a O. It becomes a that. And then I am different. Then I am somehow changed. I'm in this larger space, and I have this that here. And so, as you will see in the two demonstrations that I bring you, a person will say, in Afghanistan language, a person will say, "Oh, I think I'm uncomfortable, I think I'm angry, I think I'm furious, I'm about to go out and kill people, but I think I have a guest. Oh, I think I have a guest." And so instead of rushing out with the guns, which he'd already gotten, he puts those down and he sits down and he says, "I think I have a guest." And he goes, or she goes, to a place that with a little focusing training, the person has learned. Go to a place means get quiet, sit there, and go to where the guest would be. And this is a distinct action, an internal action. It's the guest isn't already there. Just this diffuse fury is there, but the guest is not there. Or the anxiety is there, but the guest isn't there. So what's the guest? Well, the guest is a that. You say, "Oh." And it takes a few seconds or a minute or 2 minutes for this that to form, because it isn't there as a that. Emotions are already there, you know. You feel them or you say, "Oh, I'm furious." Yeah, that's right. But this we call the felt sense. And there's a fair amount of literature about the felt sense. But you can call it anything you want. I call it a that because when it forms, then it's so distinct and it's in a different space. And time slows down there also. It's in a different space. It's, "Oh, I have that." And the person is actively looking for it, actively inviting it. Not inviting the anger, that's a different thing. Inviting the guest, inviting the that. And then it comes, and the person is still actively interrogating this that. What are you? And thereby the person is a much larger person and the space is a much larger space, and that's what these people are now going to demonstrate. Thank you. Yep. Thank you, I'm good.